Hey neighbors, it's Amber. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I just want to say up front that, trigger warning, this episode talks a lot about grief and the death of an unborn child. I'm talking with my dear friend Lindsay, who we met because our husbands worked together. Her husband actually delivered my fifth child, but that's a story for a different day. Lindsay is mom to four kids in her arms and one in her heart, including a set of boy-girl twins. I'm so grateful for all these interviews. I've learned a ton, and I really appreciate the reviews that are left. Sandy87V wrote, "As a fellow twin mom, I love this podcast. Such a cool experience to hear from a fellow twin mama." And that is the goal here, is to share everybody's different people's experiences so that we can all not only learn from each other, but just know that you are not alone in your experiences. You're good, you're bad, the ugly, the beautiful. You're not alone. And if I don't have one of those experiences to share with you, I'm sure one of my friends do. And if you'd like to share your experience, go ahead and head to my website, neighborhoodtwinmom.com, and fill out the Be a Guest form. Let's get into Lindsay's interview. Hi, I'm Amber. I have five young kids, including a set of boy-girl twins. My kids were all born within 6.5 years of each other. It's a lot of kids in a little amount of time. It has been quite the journey parenting all these kids so close in age. I've learned a lot over the years, and people often come to me for advice, but let's be honest, I don't know everything. And in those cases, I turn to other moms for their advice. I believe that people living it and doing it are the real experts. So that's why each week I'll sit down with a real expert, one of my friends, a mom like you, to get all the advice you asked for, and some you didn't. This is Neighborhood Twin Mom. Welcome to the neighborhood. So Lindsay and I have known each other for a long time, since my oldest was little, and we met because our husbands worked together. They're both in the medical field. And so why don't you introduce your family a little bit, Lindsay?
So we moved to Cheyenne with my husband to do his residency. That's how we know each other. And I love that I've gotten to know each other and stayed so close. So my family, I have a family of four little ones. My oldest is Jackson. He's 12. He's adopted. We adopted him about 4 years after trying to start a family. And then we have four-year-old twins, and they came through IVF. And then we have our little Atticus, who is now 1 year old, and he came through IVF as well.
What was the decision to try IVF opposed to adopting again? Or did you try IVF the first time? What was that decision like?
So when we first started having a hard time starting our family, we went to fertility doctors right off the bat and found out the cost of IVF and just kind of wrote that off immediately. I think he was finishing undergrad, getting ready to apply to medical school. And that was just completely unreasonable to us to have to find those funds. So we went right into adoption at that point. And it was through LDS Services, which is through our church, which I think the cost at the time was 10% of your income was the cap. So it was phenomenal. It was just an amazing way to do things. Then we went away to school, to med school. We went to Grenada, and we lived in Grenada, England, and then New York. And it wasn't even an option to do anything. I think we looked into fertility costs and things like that in England because they're free. But because I already had a child, they wouldn't let me do it. They said, "You have a child, you're not a candidate for this." So when we got to New York, we looked into it, and Dustin worked with actually some fertility doctors who gave me a lot of free treatments, but we never could cross that boundary. And when we looked into adoption at that point in New York, LDS Services was pulling out of it, and everything just felt like there were walls ahead of us. And I've noticed that in every time we've tried to approach growing our family, we know when it's not the right avenue, when we feel there's a wall, when it's not moving appropriately. So we looked into it then, along with doing fertility things. And then we looked into it again in Cheyenne, and we got a home study done for adoption, and just wall after wall, like things would not work out at all. The agency didn't seem very credible. The girl who came to our house to do the home study was fired shortly after and didn't keep any of our records. It was just, nothing's working out. And even though IVF seemed so formidable, like just like we couldn't do it, we decided to go talk to a doctor. And then that's just when things opened up. It really flowed and felt seamless at that point, just like they're meant to when things are supposed to happen that way. So that's why we made that decision ultimately.
How does Jackson feel about the fact that he's adopted and then you guys didn't adopt more kids?
I don't think there's any negative emotions about it. He has always wanted siblings. He loves his siblings. I think he would happily have another sibling if I let him. And so I don't hear any negative emotion about that. I'm assuming as he gets older, and understands more about even what it means to be adopted, because it's such a, you know, a process of growing through it and coming to understand it. He might feel that way, but he is so in touch with his siblings and being part of this family and loving this, that I just don't hear any negative emotions coming from him about it.
How much older is he than the twins?
So he's 12 and they're 4. So he was 8 years old when they were born.
So then you had the twins and your pregnancy, you were a little bit older. So I think your pregnancy was even tougher than me. I remember you keep asking me, is this supposed to be this hard? And I was like, yes, it's supposed to be this hard, but relatively uncomplicated pregnancy with the twins.
Yes. I mean, I was a geriatric pregnancy, which they remind you of all the time, but no, I mean, I was extremely sick and that was awful, but I flew through it otherwise.
The delivery was uncomplicated as well. And they didn't have any NICU time.
No, my doctor was, he wanted to take them at 38 weeks. We did a C-section because one of them was upside down and he felt strongly about it. And I also have just, I'm afraid of childbirth. I'm like the opposite of you, who like embraces it and, you know, gets excited about it. I think I've been afraid of it since I was 12. So to me, I was like, oh, good. Just cut me open. It sounded like a great alternative to risking what they call a double whammy, which is, you know, where you give birth to one baby and then have to do a C-section with the second.
Yes. And so then you have twins and that's a tough thing to swallow, but Jackson was in school. So you had just the twins at home, but then you decided to have more babies. How old were your twins when you decided to try for more kids?
We knew right away we were going to have more. It doesn't matter that we were completely underwater and drowning with taking care of the twins. We knew we wanted more. I think they were a year and a half when we went back to the fertility doctor, but we weren't able to be successful with that pregnancy until they were, beyond two. And when we went back in, they have to do a lot of the same tests they do. So they did, I believe the dye test where they shoot dye through your fallopian tubes. And they found a mass. And then, so we had to go do surgery and take the mass out of my uterus. So that delayed that. And then I think we got cold feet. I actually don't remember why. Something happened where we decided to not go ahead with the procedure then, and we waited till the following May.
How many times did you have to do IVF again for Atticus?
Every time we've had a failed one and one that worked. So I think we had one that failed and then we got the twins, and then we had one that failed and then we got Atticus.
Tell me about your pregnancy with Atticus.
It was a hard pregnancy. I always just say it's a hard year, but now I can't say that because it was the year COVID happened. So I'm not like, I'm not alone in saying that anymore. So we got pregnant with the twins. We were thrilled. I can't say the word thrilled. I was terrified. I was completely terrified that I was carrying another set of twins. We had decided to implant two embryos again. The doctor even thought we should just do one, but we just felt strongly that that was our best odds for the pregnancy to work. So we implanted two embryos. And so it's not that it should have been that surprising that we had twins, but it was very, very overwhelming. I was having a really hard time picturing raising two twins while I had, you know, 3-year-old twins.
So the second IVF that worked was another set of twins.
Yes, it was twins again. Yeah, I was pretty terrified. I was trying to come to terms with it. But while this was going on, and I don't know if you even care about these details, but with IVF, you get daily shots up until 12 weeks. Dustin gave me the shots daily and they were generally like nothing. We were very used to them. They weren't a big deal. I was able to give myself some of the shots, but one shot went awry and caused me a ton of pain and then a lot of swelling. And I don't know how long it took me to really realize there was something wrong. I think I couldn't sit down. These are on your upper left side. I couldn't sit down really. And eventually we looked at it and I had what's called a hematoma underneath my skin. So there was blood pooling and putting a lot of pressure. And we called my doctor and they weren't worried about it. They said it happens. It resolves itself. I think a couple weeks went by and the skin started decaying. We went to a wound care doc and they debrided some of the skin. And this continued to go on where I end up having like a huge golf ball size, even baseball size wound back there that was open and not doing well at all. And they put me on medication for it that didn't help. So I went to a surgeon and he kept trying to take care of it. It just got worse and worse. So I was walking around with an open wound while having really bad morning sickness. And it's just miserable and still trying to deal with the fact that I was having another set of twins. Ultimately, we decided to just go the surgical route and get it fixed. They wanted me to wait like another 2 months for the wound to heal. And I just could not see doing that. We got that taken care of. I think Christmas Day, I went in and my doctor was kind enough to do it for me on that day. And we got that sewn up and taken care of. And it took me about 2 weeks to recover from it. And so not that that's super important, but just this pregnancy didn't let me really take a break. And then shortly after we did the surgery and I'm starting to heal, we got an ultrasound that I didn't really know what was going on, but they said my baby B was looking smaller. And that's all they said. And they wanted to send me to Denver to get a more specialized ultrasound where they can see things more in more detailed fashion. And I wasn't even nervous about it. They didn't make it sound like that big of a deal. And then I went with Dustin. We brought our twins with us. It was chaos. Like, this is.
So how old are they? They're two.
They were two and a half. And I think this office is meant to be like quiet and peaceful and thoughtful. And we were none of that. We were all over the place. The nurse did not appreciate us at all. She had feelings about my children. And then they gave me the ultrasound and they wouldn't talk to me at all. And the doctor brought me back to his office. And this is a doctor who does this for a living. So he had his way of doing things, which I think is just to rip the Band-Aid off. And he shared with us that our baby B had most likely had Down syndrome, that he had some of the facial features, like I think he's missing a bone in his nose. It's hard for me to remember all the details, the size, different things like that, that would show it. So we needed a blood test to confirm, but he was pretty sure he had Down syndrome. And that was a very overwhelming moment. I would say when we were sitting there, the first thing I wanted to do was to show that I was completely okay with him having Down syndrome. So instead of like feeling anything, I immediately wanted to tell the doctor, okay, this is fine. This is totally fine. We've got this. It's great. We're going to be fine. My husband has always had a love for Down syndrome kids. I don't know why, but I'm so sorry. he's always felt very tender towards kids who have Down syndrome. And he's even pondered if someday we should adopt a child with Down syndrome, that to him, that would be considered a fortunate thing to have in his life, even though it was a lot to take in. And we definitely went through a mourning phase trying to adjust and knowing what's going on. I think Dustin felt a lot of hope that he'd get to raise this special soul. So there was a lot of good thoughts along with the kind of mourning what we thought was going to happen in our lives. After that, there was just a lot of jargon and a lot of talk about what this was. I honestly don't remember most of it starting then, which is, mid-January to the end of February. I don't remember a lot of what doctors were telling me. This one doctor who talked to us about the ultrasound, he'd call me and say, do you understand? He'd like want me to hear him. And do you understand what I'm saying? And I just say, yeah, I hear you. Because I didn't know how else to take in the information.
Well, I just remember we worked out at the same gym together and we would sit in the sauna after our workouts and I would just say, okay, what's going on now? And it would just, everything kind of fluctuated and changed from each time I talked to you. The doctors would say something different. They think he's small. Well, now they think he's Down syndrome. Now they think this. And it felt like you were on a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's exactly that. That whole time feels just like a cloud is just sitting over us of a lot of information, trying to take it in. And meanwhile, we were also going to interview for another job and trying to picture our life in another state. So that was extremely overwhelming. We actually contacted the job here who we interviewed with right around that time. I think we interviewed with them before we found any of this out. And they were wonderful and immediately like tried to find us all the resources possible that would be here. Cause I was really worried about leaving Denver Children's Hospital and the resources. I know Cheyenne has a lot of pretty amazing resources too. That just made me nervous, but they were pretty great. But during that time, we also went to a cardiologist where they had to look at his heart very specifically. They saw the hole in the heart and they assured me that we would be able to sew it up. And or even like within 6 months. So it wouldn't be a scary delivery. He should be fine. They just need to take care of it. And that's the only thing I remember taking away from that meeting. Just a lot of positivity. Like, this is doable. He's going to be okay. I have a friend who has a Down syndrome daughter who is just thriving and amazing. And I know she had hospitalizations as a kid, but I was just picturing this is going to be okay. I'm going to be able to raise this little boy and it's going to be great. Then I don't know if it was like a week after, but that same doctor who had done my earlier ultrasound called me and was trying to go over the results and kept saying, do you understand that this could have happened or this? And nothing he was saying made sense to me. And because all I was focusing on was, well, yeah, they told me there's a hole in the heart and that it's going to be okay, that it will, we'll have to fix it. We'll have to do open heart surgery, but we'll have time to do that and it'll be okay. So I don't know if I was missing details from the previous meeting or from him. I don't know where I missed it, but when we had to go for one more ultrasound and we went in and we were joking and I was, you know, you're laying in this dark room on your back and Dustin's with me, had the day off work. We had learned to leave the twins at home. So we were by ourselves and she's giving me the ultrasound and I joked that I was feeling baby B kick more and I'm just feeling so optimistic. And she left the room and didn't come in for a while. And then the doctor came in and just really quickly told me, sorry, that baby B had passed. I don't think I've ever experienced that type of grief before. That was the most personal thing that has ever happened to me, or personal loss. And I just remember laying there and I just covered my face and sobbed, and the tech didn't know what to do or the doctor know what to do. Nobody knew what to do. And I just couldn't stop sobbing for quite some time. I think they gave us a little time and they came back in and talked to us. I try to tell my husband who talks to mothers and other people how important it is to maybe not have a woman laying there with her body exposed and so vulnerable when you share stuff like that, to maybe help them get into a better situation. Cause I felt just raw and completely unprepared. Although I'm sure the doctors tried to prepare me. I obviously did not hear anything they were saying. We learned that something would have been wrong with his umbilical cord and he had passed about a week prior.
And how many weeks were you along when you found that out?
He was 24 weeks.
Typically at 24 week, you would deliver the baby at that time, but because you had twins.
Right. He stayed in there. And that had been one of the questions we'd been dealing with in the weeks prior, was if baby B was struggling, do we deliver them and risk baby A's life in order to save baby B? That was really tricky. And maybe the saving grace in all this is we did not have to make that decision. So, right, with a twin pregnancy, baby B stays in there while baby A continues to grow.
When you delivered baby A, you had another C-section. Did you get to see, well, his name is August. You named him August, the baby that mm-hmm. passed. Did you get to see him?
we did get to see him. It was really important for Dustin. I felt like I grieved him a lot in those months when I carried him. Dustin was able to maybe disconnect. He was at work. He was gone. And so when he'd come home and I'd be really sad, he'd be like, what's wrong? And I'd be like, I just am so sad. And I was grieving him continually. And Dustin just didn't really get that chance. So he made it really clear with the doctors that we didn't want anything to happen before we were able to see him, that we wanted to honor his body and take care of him. When he was delivered, Dustin got to see him. And when I was in recovery, he went and spent time with him and I got to hold him. And so it was just really, it was really special. We know not everybody connects with their losses at different stages. We felt extremely connected to August, and we just feel very strongly that he is our child forever and a member of our family permanently. It was a very sweet, tender time. There was not a lot of sadness when he was born. It was a lot of joy and sweetness and appreciation for him when he was born.
This episode brought to you by the Baby Burp Shop. It's a shop on Etsy that sells my very favorite burp cloth along with pre-made gift boxes to send to a friend. These burp cloths are the best. They're large 24 inches by 10 and a half inches. They're soft, comfy, durable, absorbent, and they wash up well. They're like that muslin material, so it's really soft when you're using it to wipe up a baby's face. I had more than one kid with acid reflux, and I felt like I was always carrying around like a beach towel to catch all the spit up. But once I discovered these burp cloths, that's all I used. I'd wash them, and then I'd use those same burp cloths. They can fit over your shoulder or over your lap if you like to burp that way. It also has a snap on it, so then you can use the burp cloth as a bib around your kid's neck. Use the link in the show notes and use code TWIN15 and you'll receive 15% off your order. And while you're there, get a gift box for your friend, your neighbor, your coworker, your cousin. You can choose a handcrafted stuffed animal, a sweet little elephant or lion. The lion is actually a rattle, a pacifier clip, a handcrafted hair bow, or a little bow tie. The hair bows are sailor bows, are so cute. Shipping is always free and your friend will appreciate the thoughtful gift that you didn't even have to prepare. So head to the show notes or find the link on my website, neighborhoodtwinmom.com, and save 15% off with promo code TWIN15 at checkout. So I'm sure when you go through a loss like this, people try to say nice things to you, but I'm sure people say a lot of rude things as well, because this is your second set of twins. And that would have been very difficult to have two sets of twins, but you wanted those twins. Do you have advice for other grieving mothers?
Oh, I don't know. Part of what made his loss really difficult was I have a very dear friend to me who gave birth to her twins at 24 weeks and they survived. But a few months after my son Atticus was born, she lost one of her twins. And it's hard for me to give advice on grieving because I feel like my grief was so small, if that makes sense, compared to hers and others. So I would say for me, the best thing to do with my grief is to be incredibly honest in it. And so I really try to tell people this is hard. I tried to talk about it a lot. And I really tried to memorialize August in my life so that he would have, and my grief would have meaning. But like I said, it's hard when we have so much stuff that happened in that year and friends with other tragedies that it was hard to feel like my grief was important. And it was, my grief is important, but it put my grief into a lot of perspective.
You have done things to honor August. Do you want to share some of those things you've done?
I mean, little things like we have a beautiful portrait I gave to my husband, Dustin, that shows him in our Savior's arms. And sorry, I love that because I think I've never been someone to talk about angels before in my life. That's not part of my vernacular. I truly believe that we have a little angel, that my son Atticus has a best friend in heaven. So that picture really, really shows his importance in our family and his membership. And then last year, around the time that we lost him, I decided to make hot chocolate bombs and raise money. I want to raise it for the Southern Oregon Down Syndrome Association, but I think with COVID, they weren't really in operation. So I ended up giving that money to the Special Olympics, but I just really wanted it to go to supporting others with disabilities. And I hope we keep finding ways to make children with disabilities part of our lives, because we feel like we're missing out on being able to raise him.
What month was he born?
He was born in May.
May of 2020. So yeah. Kind of your COVID baby, and what a weird time. But do you feel, and you don't have to throw anyone under the bus, but do you have advice for other people who try to support people in grieving? Because sometimes, I mean, that's such a hard thing because people grieve in different ways and you want to show your support in different ways. But is there something that you feel like other people should or shouldn't be doing when someone is going through a tragedy like losing a child?
Yeah, I'm sure some people in their grief might have more sensitivity or frustration to things people do. I don't know if there's a right way to handle those moments, because no matter what you're going to do, they're going to have feelings about it. And that's fair for them to have feelings. I've never been that person. Even in my fertility journey, I've never been someone who's gotten kind of bitter or hardened about it. And for me, the most helpful thing was people to not be afraid of my grief. And I see that knowing I personally am afraid of other people's grief. I run away from it. I don't know how to deal with it head on. I spent a lot of years joking, trying to help my friends joke through their sadness until I started facing, you know, more real situations in my life. Those who just head on would approach me and talk to me about it and love me and drop off gifts and hug me when I don't want to be hugged even. We're probably the most meaningful way to help me through my grief and just acknowledge that I'm grieving and that it's hard. Because I, like I said, I didn't always want to acknowledge I'm grieving. It can, especially when you're losing a baby who you didn't ever hold, you feel a little selfish. You feel like it's not big enough to grieve, but our hearts really hurt. It was great when people could see that without me having to share that.
Do you feel like people treated you that way, that your grief wasn't big enough because you didn't hold the baby? Did you feel that?
I just think I'm part of so much infertility talk and being part of even twin mom groups. You hear bigger losses, or you also hear others being dismissive of losses at like 6 weeks and 12 weeks. I think it was me. I think it was me being overly sensitive and not wanting to be a spotlight for something that other people may not consider worthy of it. So it's probably more my insecurity than it was how other people viewed me. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally does. It just is interesting to think. It's just an interesting thought. I mean, like you said, people are allowed to feel the way that they feel, but I would never want someone to feel like their trial or their hardship is not worthy of grief.
Right.
Even if it's different than someone else's trial or their grief. Atticus is only a year old, but how do you talk about August in the family? How is it having, you know, part of your twins? You only have one of them. You were expecting to have twins. Now you have one. How does that dynamic play into your family?
I think that our older set of twins, I don't think that they know we have an August, and they like talking about August. When we were able to give Atticus a blessing last year, we just had very close family around us, and Dustin shared our story with losing August because we really want to memorialize August in that moment. We have a bear that my aunt made for me. We call him the August Bear. And Jefferson just so sweetly kept saying, "Oh, August Bear, we love August Bear. We love August Bear." And I love that we have just very sweet ideas of who August is to us. There's not a lot of sadness to me approached. There's sadness when I think of what we went through and what we've lost and the opportunity we've lost in raising him. I feel like we have a lot of joy. Atticus is an incredibly special little soul to us. And it's probably because of what we went through to get him here. I would have loved to have raised August, but I also feel like there was a tender mercy in our home and in our lives that we were able to have him as our child without having the chaos of an extra set of twins. And I treasure the fact that I get to sit and just hold Atticus and just have my arms full of him too. It's very special after raising twins to have one baby. It's a kind of a mixed emotion when it comes to that too, that how special I find my time with Atticus.
It is super different once you have twins and then you have another kid. It feels totally different, not just like, oh, well, there's just one of you. But yeah, like you said, you can fill your arms with one baby and give that one baby attention. Did you ever feel like, well, I felt this way, that I wasn't giving enough because there's two of them and there wasn't enough of me to go around? Did you feel that way with the twins?
Oh yeah. I remember crying about it often, that I just couldn't give them each enough. There was a phase where they had colds and I was really strict with my twin schedules. I was obsessive with having them on a schedule because I had so much fear about what that would mean if they weren't on a schedule. I had to get them off the schedule and have them awake at different times just so I could hold them really while they were sick and really give them the attention they needed. I drove myself to exhaustion while they were sick, trying to give them that time. So I constantly felt like I was not giving them enough, that they were only getting a part of me.
Now Atticus is a year old and your twins are 4 and Jackson is 12. So you have a full house. What do you do for yourself?
Oh, I think I'm just getting out of survival mode. I don't think there's a lot I do for myself yet. I think we're just getting to that point. I just weaned Atticus. So I'm looking forward. I'm going to trips without him. I brought him on every trip I've gone on recently. He's always by my side, as are pretty much all of them, because it's a new year and a new job for Dustin. And it's a lot of changes. I'm with them all the time.
But you guys adventure a ton.
We do. I don't think I would be happy if I stayed at home. We risk days of meltdowns and tears and yelling and screaming in order to get out of the house and have an adventure and make memories.
You do have stuff. You did that fundraiser for August in honor of August, but you also involved in another fundraiser.
I'm really fortunate. I have a dear friend who her sister, along with her, and I believe some other friends, started an organization called Compassion Takes Action. They saw a need with these Rohingyan refugees who were being driven into Bangladesh, into these refugee camps. And they saw this, I believe, on the news and just felt very compelled to help these people in this region. They just thought, we have to do something. And they started by gathering supplies and were eventually able to bring them to Bangladesh and have since created connections there and know their needs and have liaisons there. And they've gone back several times since then. So they created Compassion Takes Action to facilitate being able to take care of these people. And my friend Michelle has asked me to come on board as the president of the Oregon chapter. And I'm really thrilled specifically because she shared that there is an organization there who takes care of the disabled and elderly who have kind of just been cast onto the street. They take them in and they have almost nothing for them. I believe the basic thing they can offer them really is shelter and some food. That's kind of where I'm going to come in and where my fundraising opportunities are going to go towards. I really want to have the money that I personally raise and that our chapter raises focusing on this home for the disabled and elderly and trying to make the life better for them and finding their specific needs and wants and trying to meet them in any way I can. Compassion Takes Action, I find to be just an amazing organization. Everyone is a volunteer. All of the money goes directly to the needs that we share. So I know at Christmas, they have kind of a giving tree type of idea where you can go online and say, I'm going to buy a goat for these people. And that goat goes to those people and you can find out later what happened. There's just nothing lost in translation there. There's no middlemen. I'm excited to be working with them.
That's awesome. I'm sure that sort of organization is great for self-care. I know a lot of people talk about baths and painting your nails as self-care, but be able to do something for somebody else is also can be great for self-care as well.
That's true. I think that's my number one way I have dealt with just postpartum depression and moving and grieving has been service. To be able to be part of this organization and to make those hot chocolate bombs and to throw fundraisers, it is all self-care. It's all the way to kind of lift me up through my own things.
Well, Lindsay, I enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much for chatting with me. We should chat more often.
Definitely.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want to hang out some more, you can follow me on Instagram at @neighborhoodtwinmom. If you want more info on what we talked about in this episode or a transcription of the audio, head to neighborhoodtwinmom.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and review. This helps other people be able to find the podcast. Music for this episode was composed by Cameron Norby. Find more of his work on YouTube.